Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll read text 21 by myself, and then 22 we'll recite together. So this is Canto 10, Chapter 16, text 21. Ta Krishna Mataram Apatyam Anupravishtam Tulya Vyata Samanugriha Shucha Shravantya Tasta Braja Priya Katha Katayantya Asan Krishna Nanir Pita Drisho Mitaka Pratikaha. Although the elder gopis were feeling just as much distress as she and were pouring forth a flood of sorrowful tears, they had to forcefully hold back Krishna's mother, whose consciousness was totally absorbed in her son. Standing like corpses with their eyes fixed upon his face, these gopis each took turns recounting the pastimes of the darling of Braj. And now, today's verse. Krishna prana nirvishato Nanda din vikshatam hridam Pratyashedhat sa bhagavan Ramakrishna anubhavavet. Any Prabhus would like to chant? Krishna prana nirvishato Nanda din vikshatam hridam Pratyashedhat sa bhagavan Ramakrishna anubhavavet. Mataji. Krishna prana nirvishato Nanda din vikshatam hridam Pratyasedhat sa bhagavan Ramakrishna anubhavavet. Krishna prana nirvishato Nanda din vikshatam hridam Pratyashedhat sa bhagavan Ramaha Krishna anubhavavet. Krishna pranan. The man whose very life and soul was Krishna. Nirvishataha. Entering. Nanda adin. Headed by Nanda Maharaj. Viksha. Seeing. Tham. That. Hridam. Lake. Pratyashedhat. Forbade. Saha. He. Bhagavan. The all-powerful Lord. Ramaha. Balaram. Krishna. Of Lord Krishna. Anubhava. The power. Veet. Knowing well. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The servants of Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. Lord Balaram then saw that Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who had dedicated their very lives to Krishna were beginning to enter the serpent's lake. So actually out of concern for Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan were slowly starting to walk into the lake to save Krishna. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram fully knew Lord Krishna's actual power and therefore he restrained them. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Lord Balaram checked some of the cowherd men by speaking to them, others by physically holding them, and still others by casting upon them his potent smiling glance. Distraught over the situation, they were prepared to give up their lives for Lord Krishna by entering the serpent's lake. Om Agyana Titimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tatati Swapadantikam Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Before I begin this morning's class, I would like to ask all the devotees for their blessings, especially our senior devotees, Mother Krishna Archana, Mother Rohini, Raktak Prabhu, Keshava Kishore. You guys are all much my seniors, so please shower your blessings upon me. And those of you who are my friends, please, you also shower your blessings. This is such an elevated subject matter. So, in these two verses today, we're hearing about the reaction of those who are in a Vatsalya Rasa with Krishna. We heard about how the gopis felt when they saw Krishna being attacked by Kaliya the snake. But now we're hearing what the mothers felt, actually, when they saw Krishna in the coils of Kaliya the snake. Mother Krishna, should I shift the board a little bit that way? I'm just a little concerned, because it must be very uncomfortable. Okay, all right, you're fine. So, before, there's a lot of things I want to share in the class today. Particularly, I found some really nice excerpts from different shastras to help us appreciate more deeply the love of Mother Yashoda. But I thought before we go into that, we could meditate a little bit about what we think Mother Yashoda might be feeling. See, by this point in the 16th chapter of the 10th canto, we've heard a lot of very beautiful descriptions of Krishna as a child and Mother Yashoda's loving interactions with him. This is the little boy who would grab the calves of the tails of calves and let the calves, you know, drag him through the dirt of Vrindavan, getting covered with cow urine and the dirt of Braj. He would steal butter. He would feed it to the monkeys. He would run away from his mother in the fear of her stick. He defeated great demons like Putna and Trinavarta. And through all of this, Mother Yashoda never got a sense that Krishna is anything more than her lovable child. So fragile, so soft. If some of you, I think the only way we can relate to this, most of us are not mothers. Mother Krishna Archana has been teaching little kids most of her life, so I'm sure she has some sense of protection for them. But you know, we can imagine if little Braja Leela, if she was about to topple and fall off a chair, all of our parental instincts would immediately awaken and we would immediately run to try to save her or protect her, right? And she's just tipping off a chair. It's not even that drastic. But imagine if some huge monstrous serpent was trying to attack one of our children. How would we feel, you know? And we're just material human beings. We're not even eternal associates of the Lord. Mother Yashoda is the perfection of motherly rasa. Think about what that means. It means that all the love that any mother in this world experiences is not even a fraction of a drop of what Mother Yashoda feels for Krishna. She's the epitome, the perfection of parental love. So for someone who has so, and you know, and think, the more attached you are to someone, the more fear and pain you feel for their safety, right? Like if Daniel tells me that, oh, you know, my brother was, let's not use a personal example, it's not a very nice thing. If someone tells me that their brother was, say, in like some sort of accident or some sort of harm, I might say, oh, I feel really bad for you. I'll pray for them, you know. But you who are attached to this person are intensely suffering because you're attached to that person, right? So the more, I have no attachment to this person, so I feel nothing, right? So imagine the more attachment we have for somebody, the more anxiety we feel when something is happening to them. So imagine Mother Yashoda, whose attachment to Krishna is like You know, the Mount Sumeru of attachment. It's like incredible, her motherly love for Krishna. So what she must be experiencing in that moment when she sees her soft son, you know, her very, very soft son whose feet are so tender that on the first day that he was going to herd the cows, Mother Yashoda said, "You must wear shoes because you cannot walk these forest paths. The pebbles will prick your feet. You know, you must carry an umbrella because the sun will burn your skin." This soft like butter son, you know, of hers, of Mother Yashoda's, who has been, as Bilwa Mangal Thakur says, just a breastfed child, you know, a breastfed child of Mother Yashoda. How she must be feeling when she sees this precious little baby in the coils of a serpent. She's almost losing her life. She's almost losing her life. So, and the nature of that motherly affection is that in that intensity of her love, she has no awareness that Krishna is all-powerful. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, she has very little awareness of that. But that awareness is completely obfuscated when her affection for Krishna arises. How can we understand this? Think about it like this, right? Do you have this experience that sometimes when you're talking to a friend and your friend is like maybe having some health issues or struggling with something, we give them some advice, right? We give them some advice because out of care and concern, we want to help them, isn't it? In reality, most of the things we tell friends and people we care about, they can already do on their own, right? Like the other day, we went furniture hunting with Mother Krishnarjuna. I was very concerned. I said, "Do you want some water? Have you drank enough water?" She's an adult. I don't need to ask her these things. If she's 30, she'll go and drink water, isn't it? But it's just the nature of affection that we forget that the other person has some independent ability to take care of themselves. And that's just in material relationships. So what to speak of in Mother Yashoda's relationship with Krishna? Her affection for him is so strong that she can't even process that my son is fully capable of taking care of himself. No, actually, Mother Yashoda thinks, if I don't feed him, he'll die. Like if he skips a meal, if today I don't feed Krishna butter, tomorrow he's dead. This is just how intense her affection is. And Krishna knowing all of this, is in a way manifesting this Leela. Well, let's put it like this. Yoga Maya, the internal energy that rules the spiritual world, is manifesting this pastime because she wants to heighten and accentuate the parental love of Krishna's parents, as well as the romantic love of the gopis and the friendly love of the coward boyfriends. And Krishna, he's expert. He knows how to create excitement in his devotees' lives. We know that, even living in the material world, Krishna never takes it easy on us, right? You might have a good job, might have a nice house, but then you have these annoying kids. It's a joke. The point is, Krishna never lets you just relax. He always wants you to love him more. That's the point. Krishna always wants more. You know, Bibi Madhava Maharaj used to say, you go to Krishna, offering him something in your hand, he's not interested in what you're offering him, he's interested in what you're hiding behind your back. You know? So Krishna, you go up to Krishna and says, "Here Krishna, this is for you." Krishna is like, "What you got behind your back? I want more. I want more of that," you know? So in the same way, even in the material world, we see Krishna is always demanding more space in our heart. How? He puts in situations where we have to take shelter of him. He never lets it, he never makes it easy for us. One time, Srila Radhanath Swami tells his story how he visited a farm community in Pennsylvania. And in this lecture, I heard Maharaj was explaining how the farm community was just beautiful. You know, everything was perfect. They had businesses for the devotees. The cows were well taken care of. Everything was very well managed. There was a lot of prosperity on the farm. And Maharaj was like, "Wow, I wish we had a project like this in ISKCON. You know, we have farms, but our farms struggle sometimes. They don't always get the support they need, you know." So Maharaj was like, "Wow, I wish we had a project like this in ISKCON, you know." So he honestly went and talked to the guru of the place, the Mayavadi guru, and said, "How did you manage to do this? You know, like, how did you manage such a well-functioning farm project?" Right? Adam's wondering, like, "Yeah, how did he do that? Like, I'd like a farm project." So you know what the guru said to him? This Mayavadi guru said to Radhanath Maharaj, "You could never have something like this in ISKCON." And Maharaj was a little taken aback, like, "A little proud are we? You know, what's going on? That's a bit of a bold statement. You could never have something like this in ISKCON." And this Mayavadi, he repeated it again. He said, no, you will never have something like this in ISKCON. And I'll tell you why. It's because we're worshipping Lord Shiva, who is the Lord of the material energy. So his business is to provide prosperity for his devotees. And you're worshipping Krishna. His business is to take it all away. His business is to make you cry. So you will never have this level of material functionality and success that we have, because Krishna doesn't like that. He doesn't like his devotees being comfortable in the material world. He wants us to be back with him in the spiritual world. So that's our position here. What to speak of the residents of Vrindavan, who already have pure love for Krishna, and now Krishna just wants to taste. He wants to relish what Mother Yashoda feels when she sees him in the coils of Kaliya the serpent. Krishna's, one of his qualities is lolium. He's very restless. Very, very restless. He's not satisfied with just a non-adventurous life. It's why we in the material also want an adventurous life, actually, because it comes from Krishna. So I thought what we would do, and this is the part of the class where you will really have to work hard to pay attention, is we're going to read the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. We'll discuss it. And then we'll read a little section of Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary also to verses 21 and 22, because it's just so good. You'll see why it's so nice. So again, verse 21 goes like this. Although the elder gopis were feeling just as much distress as she and were pouring forth a flood of sorrowful tears, they had to forcibly hold back Krishna's mother, whose consciousness was totally absorbed in her son. So imagine the scene. There is the Kaliya lake. There's fumes coming out because of the poisonous vapors. Everything is dead all around. There's no living vegetation, nothing. There's one single kadamba tree. And in this dark, poisonous, hot, steamy water, this 10-headed serpent. I mean, imagine if you even saw something like that in real life. You would freak out, like totally freak out, right? This 10-headed serpent has Krishna in his coils. So, and there's Mother Yashoda running towards the Kaliya lake to jump in and save her son. And these gopis are holding her back. Standing like corpses with their eyes fixed upon his face, these gopis each took turns recounting the pastimes of the darling of Braj. So just to soothe her anxiety, to pacify her anxiety, Srila Jiva Goswami actually explains what they told her. So we'll hear a little bit about what the gopis told Mother Yashoda as they were trying to restrain her. But first, let's read Sri Vishwanath's commentary. He says, this verse describes the distress of those in parental love. So this is the feeling of those in parental love. Tahar refers to the famous women of Braj with children, because some of these elder gopis also had kids, but they always had this secret desire in their hearts that we wish Krishna could be our child, which desire was fulfilled in the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Yashoda is described as being torn apart upon seeing her son. That would mean she entered the same state as her son. In other words, Krishna, in the coils of Kaliya, had fainted. So when it says that Mother Yashoda entered the same state as her son, it means that she actually also was about to lose consciousness, because Krishna at one point did lose consciousness. It's a poisonous lake, and he's a little boy, so it's natural for the pastime for him to lose consciousness. Seeing her try to jump into the river, other elder gopis took her by the arms, so they held on to her really tight, as she was still fairly conscious, and washed her face covered with sweat and tears. They washed her face, which was covered with sweat and tears. In loud voices, they began to recite stories about the dear boy of Braj in order to revive her. So now here's what Srila Jiva Goswami writes. He says, though the other women were equally afflicted, they held on to her firmly and constantly. They released tears of grief in streams, right? Tears were just pouring out in streams. They began to relate to each other topics dear to Braja, such as Krishna being protected, and his killing of Baka and Vatsasura using his strength. Quote, he has killed many great demons. What is this one rascal snake among all of them? He will kill the snake and come now. That's what they're telling Mother Yashoda, like, come on, he's killed Bakasura, Vatsasura, Putna. What is this silly little snake? Just relax. He's going to kill the snake and he'll be out of the water in no time. They spoke like this to pacify Yashoda. They stood with their eyes fixed on Krishna and later appeared like corpses. Vishnu Purana describes their grief in detail. Now this is very beautiful. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the Vishnu Purana, how the gopis were feeling. I'll just read a few lines because I don't want to read too much. Also, it's hard to focus. Here's what the gopis were thinking. We will all enter the huge lake of the snake king with Yashoda. She's going, we're also going. It is not proper for us to return to Braj. How can we leave Krishna here and go back home? What is the day without the sun, the night without the moon, and what is the cow without the bull, and what is Braja without Krishna? So beautiful. This is what they were thinking. What is the use of a sun if there is no moon? What is the use of a cow if there is no bull? You know? What is the use of the night if there is no moon? Sorry. And what is Braja without Krishna? Without Krishna, we cannot return to Gokul incomplete. Where Krishna with the complexion of a blue lotus is absent, it is like a forest. It is like a forest having a lake without water. So a place where there is no Krishna, it's like a big forest and this dry, empty lake. That's what it feels like. Something very significant is missing. O Yashoda, not seeing Krishna with lotus eyes, how could the wretched people continue living in the village? Right? So if we go back without Krishna and Krishna is not there, people will die. Nobody will be able to live anymore. Since the unlimited treasures of our minds have been captured by his sweet speech, without lotus-eyed Krishna, we will not go to Nanda Gokul. O cowherd women, look at his smiling face when he looks at us, even though he is held by the coils of the king of snakes. What a beautiful description. The gopis are very determined that they will not leave Krishna there. That if Krishna will not come out of the lake, then they will go in with Mother Yashoda. Because like they say, what is the night without the moon? What is the day without the sun? So what is Braja without Krishna? This is the next verse, verse 22. This is the verse where Lord Balaram is trying to reassure the residents of Vrindavan that they have nothing to worry about. Right? This is the next verse. So this is Sri Vishwanath's commentary to verse 22. He says, Balaram prevented Nanda and others from jumping in the river. Quote, and this is Balaram, now Balaram speaking to the residents of Vrindavan, trying to reassure them. Garga Muni has said that you will be saved from all obstacles by this sun. Keeping this in mind, don't you think he will be safe from this danger? Because when Garga Muni did the name-giving ceremony of Krishna, he made this prediction that actually this child is very special and he will protect all the residents of Braj. So Balaram is trying to remind them, don't you remember? Garga Muni made this prediction that he's going to protect all of us. So you really think there's something to be afraid of right now? Just be patient. If after you all jump in the river, Krishna comes back, who will care for and raise my little brother? This is a good point. If you die and my brother, you know, defeats the snake, then who's going to take care of my little brother? This is so sweet. You will be neglecting Garga's order to take care of the boy well. How will he be raised? This is Balaram's logic. That if you die, who's going to raise my little brother? So sweet. So this is Balaram trying to restrain the elderly gopas and gopis, especially the gopas, from trying to rush into the Kaliya Lake. So now I thought I'm going to read a few excerpts from a few different books like Ananda Vrindavan Champu and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. They're very, very beautiful. And I think that'll help us enter into Mother Yashoda's Vatsalya Bhava a little bit more. Is that okay? Can we read a few excerpts? Yeah, it's fine. So this is a description of Krishna returning home in the evening from the pasturing grounds. This is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It says, when Krishna was a little grown up and was taking care of the small calves, he would often go near the forest. And when he was a little bit late returning home, Nanda Maharaj would immediately get up on the Chandra Shalika, which is a small shed built on the roof for getting a bird's eye view all around. So imagine, Krishna's out in the forest, he's a little late. So what happens when, we all know this growing up, when we were kids, we went to play with a mother, a friend of ours, we were a little late coming home, our mothers would panic. I remember Jai Jagannath tells a lot of cool stories about your mother, extremely concerned about him. Like one time Jai, I think, ran away from home, like just left home, you know, and your mother kind of like followed him all the way to the laundromat. He was like playing video games and she was like so concerned, and 7 years old. And I think when he came back, he got a whooping, something like that. So anyways, mothers are always concerned about their children when they leave the house. This is the nature of motherly love. So Nanda Maharaj was also concerned. So what did he do? He climbed on top of a small shed from where he could get a view all around. And he would watch for Krishna. He would look, where is my son? Where is my son? Worrying about the late arrival of his little son, then the Maharaj would remain on the Chandrashalika until he could indicate to his wife that Krishna, surrounded by his little coward friends, was coming back with the calf. So he would wait until he got a little bit of a sign. As soon as he got a sign, he would inform his wife, he's on his way. Nanda Maharaj would point out the peacock feather on his child's head and would inform his beloved wife how the child was pleasing his eyes. He would see, far in the distance, he would see the little bit of peacock feather. He knew, okay, Krishna's coming back. Great. Mother Yashoda would then address Nanda Maharaj, quote, "See my dear son, whose eyes are white, who has a turban on his head, a wrapper on his body, and leg belts which tinkle very sweetly on his feet. He's coming near along with his Sarabi calves, and just see how he's wandering upon the sacred land of Vrindavan." Like this, she would tell Nanda Maharaj, "Look at my beautiful son coming home with the calves, wandering on the sacred land of Vrindavan with a white, you know, white eyes and a turban." Here's another description of Mother Yashoda's motherly love. This is from Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and this scene takes place when Krishna is holding up Govardhan Hill. And when Krishna is holding up Govardhan Hill, a lot of very, very beautiful pastimes take place under the hill. He was holding it up for 7 days, so a lot happened in those 7 days. In the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we get a little glimpse, but in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Sri Kavi Karnapur goes into great detail to describe what are some of the activities that take place under the hill. And they're very sweet. And you have to understand, when Krishna was holding up Govardhan Hill, the coward boys many times would raise their sticks trying to support it. They couldn't, you know, they wanted help also. I mean, it's a hill. You know, like, it's just mind-blowing how it never strikes them that, like, little boy holding up a mountain with his pinky finger. And their only thought was, your arm's gotta hurt, right? You might be in a little bit of discomfort. That's their only concern. Anyways, so here's a description of what happens under the hill. Madhu Mangal pleased Krishna by laughing and merrymaking. Intimate friends like Subal, continually enthused and encouraged him. Raktak, Patrak, and others in Dasyaras constantly served Krishna with affection. Oh, it's like half our community here. We got Raktak, got Patrak in Wisconsin, got Subal over here. Thus the different associates of Krishna delighted in their individual loving relationships with him. Mother Yashoda and others, overcome with parental affection, however, felt very sad to see Krishna like this. So the friends were laughing, they were enjoying, because that's friendly Ras. You know, it's like when you're out with your friends and you're doing skateboarding tricks and your friend falls off and scrapes his knee, all the friends are like, "Whoa, that was awesome, man, that was a great move." The mother's like, "What happened? What happened? Like, did you hurt yourself?" So it's just the nature of friendly Ras, that friends are like, "Yeah, that was great, good work," you know. And mothers are like panicking and freaking out. So the friends were having a good time, but the parents were feeling very sad. To please her son, Yashoda tried to offer Krishna some juicy, camphorated tambula made of cardamom, nutmeg, cloves, lime paste, katechu, and betel nut. Sounds like a very, very fancy mouth freshener. Wrapped in a dark green pan leaf, this expertly made tambula had the power to aid digestion, remove anxiety, and fill one with pleasure. Some of the Yashoda's says, holding it in her lotus palm, Yashoda tenderly offered it to Krishna while pleading. So there's Krishna holding up Govardhan Hill, and Mother Yashoda is holding out a tambula, and she says, "Oh my darling Damodar, please stop playing your melodious murli." That's the other thing. He's holding up Govardhan Hill, and with the other hand, he's playing his flute. This is the height of coolness. Who can do such a thing but Krishna? Then Mother Yashoda says, "The sound of the flute cannot fill your stomach." This is always a mother's concern. Have you eaten? Because I remember as a kid, my mother was always concerned. Have you eaten? Did you eat? How much did you eat? Show me how much you ate. Eternal worry. "The sound of the flute cannot fill your stomach. Please take this tambula and remove my anxiety. Why are you disturbing my mind by not eating? Why, Krishna, are you doing like this? You're just playing your flute, laughing with your friends. Why don't you eat something? Now eat this wonderful tambula, which will enchant your mind. If you don't want it, then at least eat something that you like very much. You have passed many days without eating, so don't delay anymore. If you're waiting for the rain to stop," because remember, it's like storming outside. And Mother Yashoda's like inside trying to feed her son. So she says, "If you're waiting for the rain to stop, then please consider that your brother Balaram is also very much afflicted by hunger. Since you will do anything for your brother, please honor my request and accept this tambula. In other words, she's now trying to put emotional pressure that, look, you haven't eaten, and because you haven't eaten, your brother has also not eaten. This is just the nature of cultured, affectionate dealings. Typically in Vedic culture, a wife wouldn't eat before her husband. This is part of the culture, actually, in Vedic culture, that the wife would wait, actually, to first feed her husband. Draupadi did like this. She fed all her husbands, and then she would take her meal at the very end. So it's just the nature of affection, relationship. Even when we sit together to eat, right? If I invite you to eat with me, and you come, and I've already finished half my plate, how would you feel? It's a little strange, you know? So Balaram was like that. Krishna is not eating, I'm also not eating. So Mother Yashoda is putting a little pressure. Look, Balaram is also hungry. So please, for his sake, eat something. Then, this is very sweet, Subapu, you'll really appreciate this scene. After saying this, Yashoda called, Subal, you are overflowing with love for Krishna. Since you are also the dear object of his affection, will you please offer this tambula to Krishna? So she sees that Krishna is not taking the tambula from her. So she tells one of his friends, come, you try this now. Saying this, Yashoda put the tambula in Subal's hand. Krishna's dear friend Subal felt boundless joy as he held the tambula in one hand and with the other removed Krishna's flute. So sweet. He's in one hand, he's holding the tambula, and the other is saying, Krishna, stop playing for a second, it's okay. Takes the flute out. Taking the edge of his cloth, he gently cleansed Krishna's lotus face. Then he wiped Krishna's face. It was sweating. So personal, right? He's like wiping Krishna's face, which was adorned with uguru and slightly reddish in hue. Seeing Krishna's lips turn red from chewing the tambula offered by Subal, Yashoda smiled in great happiness. This is a little tiny glimpse into what Mother Yashoda experiences in her loving dealings with Krishna. One last thing I would like to share today is something from Gauralila. And why do I want to share this? Because it's explained by our acharyas that the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the pastimes of Krishna merge into one another. And in fact, for those of us who are coming the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if you truly want to get a sense of Krishna Leela, then we have to also understand Gaura Leela, the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the reason for his descent, but also his activities in Navadvip with his associates. So the Madhavananda Prabhu, one very nice devotee, he's fond of saying where Krishna Leela ends, Gaura Leela begins. And where Gaura Leela ends, Krishna Leela begins. So it's like these two winding paths that are always merging into one another. And when we hear a little bit, I'll just read a little description of Mother Shachi's love for Nimai. Nimai is the name for young Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was called Nimai by his mother. Does anybody know why? Well, the older devotees definitely know why. Do you know why he was called Nimai? Yeah, Hari Bol. If I had a cookie, I would give you one. Yes, he was born under a neem tree, so he was called Nimai, out of love and affection. So here's a little description of Mother Shachi's loving dealings with her son. It says, the next day Nimai got covered with dust while rolling on the ground playing with his friends. This is from Chaitanya Mangal by Srila Lochandas Thakur. Seeing him smeared with dust, Shachi Devi said, Nimai, you look like a golden doll whose face is more beautiful than the moon. Why are you causing me so much anxiety by rolling about in the dust? Right? The kids are having a good time, but mothers are feeling concerned. Then Sachi cleansed the dust from her son and kissed his face in ecstasy. After many years, the darling of Sachi Mata began roaming about with friends of the same age. They played various games under the trees on the banks of the Ganga. So just like Krishna and his coward boyfriends on the banks of the Yamuna, what kind of games would they play? They would imitate animals, right? Like Krishna and his friends would see frogs and they would start hopping like frogs. And I remember reading also in Krishna book how they would see butterflies and bees and they would start chasing after them. You know, they would imitate the sounds of the monkeys and the swans. This is what little kids do. It's like beautiful, you know. It's the forest of Vrindavan. There's so much to play with and so much to do. Nowadays, unfortunately, we don't get that kind of bountiful nature. You know, we get like a tar-paved basketball court or something like that. We don't get rivers and streams and all this beautiful nature that we see in Vrindavan. So, but Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit, had a similar disposition. They played various games under the trees on the banks of the Ganga. Sometimes they played Markata Kela, a game of imitating monkeys by standing on one leg. So they were also imitating monkeys. Now, here we hear about Mother Shachi. Learning that Gaurahari was playing too near the Ganges, Shachi Devi grabbed a stick and ran there to catch him. While standing on one leg and playing, so he's standing, Nimai is like having a good time with his friends, he's standing on one leg pretending to be a monkey. All of a sudden he hears, Nimai heard Sachimata calling in a threatening voice. Fearing punishment, Nimai ran away like a mad elephant while continuously looking back over his shoulder, yelling, "Catch him! Catch him!" Sachi chased behind. So Sachimata is chasing after him. She's saying, "Catch this boy." The Lord, the jewel amongst the brahmanas, easily outran his mother. In great haste, Nimai entered the house. So this chase sequence is happening. It's very similar to Mother Yashoda chasing after Krishna in the Damodar Leela. And what was Mother Yashoda thinking? Mother Yashoda was thinking that if I let this boy continue to grow up stealing butter, breaking pots, this is not good character. And she thought, he's so afraid that somehow Mother Yashoda thought he's going to run into the forest and run away from me. So she thought, it's better I catch him and tie him up so he doesn't run away into the forest and further put himself in harm's way. So actually, in both cases, the mothers were extremely concerned for their child. Mother Yashoda was concerned for Krishna and Sachimata was concerned for Nimai because she doesn't want him playing too near the Ganga. It's dangerous. Somebody could fall in and drown. When Sachidevi reached home, she just stood there in amazement. Why? Because when Nimai entered the house, he started breaking his mother's earthen cooking pots. Started smashing them. Nimai's head down in shame, his body shook and he began to cry. Nimai's teardrops looked like a garland of pearls dripping down from the moon. So poetic, so beautiful. Seeing Gauranga's face, Sachimata, melting in affection, called for her darling son to come and sit on her lap. So, sometimes in the material world, mothers also love their children, but it'll be very hard for a mother to, you know, show affection at a moment when the child has broken all her cooking pots. That's kind of a good reason to be very angry. But Sachimata's heart just melted. This is transcendental love. In this way, the transcendental pastimes of her naughty son Nimai were beyond Sachidevi's comprehension. It goes on. This whole chapter is actually very beautiful, describing one pastime after another. In fact, at one pastime, I couldn't find it last night, but I remember reading it years ago, how at one point Sachimata is just so exhausted. She's so exhausted because Nimai is just so naughty. Every single day, he's going to the banks of the Ganga, he's stealing the clothes of the brahmanas, he's teasing the young girls, he's fighting, he's running around. Sachimata is just completely fried, you know. So she thinks, I will do a worship to the demigods and pray to them to reform my son. So it's described in Chaitanya Mangal how when she's on her way to the demigod temple, she's carrying a tray full of sweets covered with a cloth. And Nimai kind of like peeks out from behind a tree. He's like, "What you got over there?" And she's like, "Nothing, nothing. You go and play with your friends." He's like, "No, no, what's under the cloth?" And then this passage describes how forcibly he like ripped off the cloth and stole the sweets that were meant for the demigod worship. And Sachimata is just crying, you know, "Why are you like this?" But of course the pastime ends with her, you know, with Nimai on her lap and her showering her love. So this is the nature of children. In fact, Prabhupada writes in Lilamrita that a naughty child is a very intelligent child. When he was a little kid, Prabhupada had two little toy pistols. He had one, and he told his father to get me another one. And his mother wasn't fond of the idea, but Prabhupada would go around shooting his toy pistols, and his mother didn't like it. But, you know, there's a rasa there, you know. The kid is being naughty, the mother has to chastise. So there's a rasa there. And this is what we see in the transcendental pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna. So that was my class for today. I hope you found something useful. Does anybody have any reflections or comments, corrections? Anything from anyone? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hare
Bol.
Thank you for your wonderful class. Wonderful as usual, very poetic. Quoted a lot of very wonderful verses. I could reiterate them, but before I get on with my question, as far as the story of Jaya is concerned,
story of who?
My brother.
Oh,
Jaya,
yeah.
Jagannath Prabhu, the one that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I'll try to relate this to the Bhagavatam. So, long story short, he always wanted to be on his own. And even when he was seven, he thought he could protect himself. So A block away, there was an arcade, a laundromat, but it had an
right,
arcade in it.
Right, the arcade, I remember that, yeah.
And so he told my mother one day, you know, I want to go to an arcade by myself. And so she knew there was nothing she could do, so what she did was she allowed them to leave the house first. And then my brother was 6 or 7, I was 4 or 5. And so she took me. When my brother left, he was walking by himself, but then soon after, she was walking behind him, following him. And even sometimes she would dive behind a tree when he would feel some energy. And so finally, when he got to the laundromat, as usual, he was playing his video games. And so she was watching him across the street. And so one day, some 11 or 12-year-olds bullied him off the arcade. And all of a sudden, my mother appeared like Lord Nishinga did. And she probably said something to those 11, 12-year-olds, probably that we, I don't know, something very authoritative, you could say. And then she allowed them to get back on the arcade. And he said, Ima. Ima is mother for in
yeah.
Hebrew.
Yeah.
He was like, where'd you come from? She was like, basically, she was like, I don't know, something like that.
And just happened to be passing by.
Exactly. So I kind of appreciate that now that I'm thinking in light of that's how the Lord is with us, with Prahlad, you know, sometimes either our external demons or more like our internal demons, he always comes to rescue us, even if we can't see it that way.
Yeah.
But my question, main question, comments regarding this class, you were in a verse that mentions Krishna Pranam. Krishna was the life of the residents of Braja. Because he's Bhagavan, it mentions he's all-powerful. I think that was the translation. We see in the material world that when Krishna's all Bhagavan means he's the most beautiful, famous, rich, strongest. And we see that when our power source is gone, you know, which is a personality, our girlfriend, our boyfriend, our husband, wife, friend, our power source is gone. So one of the you mentioned some of those poetic verses from the, I forgot where you quoted from, but it basically said, what is the use of the day without the sun, the night without the moon, or
that was Vishnu Purana. Jiva Goswami was quoting the Vishnu Purana.
Yeah, that was a beautiful analogy. Of course, in the modern era, mostly the analogies we can relate to is probably technological. One thing I always keep in mind is that...
what is life without an iPhone?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. What is an iPhone without a charger? And so in the Gita, one thing I keep in mind, there's a nice verse that Prabhupada always quote, Ishwara Sarabhutanam, Pridesha Arjuna Tishati, Brahmayam, Brahmayam, what is that? What's the verse? Brahmayam, Yantra Rudani Mayaya, this body is compared to a machine, Yantra. And Prabhupada will always use a car, but in our day and age, we more like iPhones or computers. And we see that a computer is only attractive when it's disconnected to its power source and unattractive. Mm-hmm. When it's disconnected from its power source. That's why in chapter 10, 8, Krishna says, what is that verse? Ahamsa rasa prabhava.
Oh,
I think he quotes the other day.
Yeah.
Ahamsa rasa prabhava matasarva prabhavate. Iti matsua bhajate mam buddha bhava samavita. Those who are wise know me to be the power source of everything, and they connect to me, those who are intelligent. However, there's a question regarding your class that you were mentioning that the residents of Vrindavan. And one obstacle that prevent us from connecting to Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan were covered by Yogamaya, and therefore they didn't know Krishna was God. So they treated Krishna as if he was helpless. Now, unfortunately, in our situation, we're covered by Mahamaya, meaning although we're devotees, we know that Krishna is God. And when we know that Krishna is God, sometimes in deity worship, that prevents us from being taking shelter of Krishna, like, oh, I don't have to serve Krishna. I'm lazy in my practice. Why Krishna's God? He could take care of himself.
Yeah.
And so there's one nice story. One devotee, and then maybe you could expand on this point. Just a nice glorification or appreciation of him, that how Krishna reciprocates. And Ypsilanti, do you know that devotee named Ozo or Rene?
Yeah.
Rene.
Yeah.
So Rene, when he was here, he told me a very beautiful story. He actually went through, a lot of times you think you go through some obstacles that are very difficult, but he definitely went through some obstacles that, you know, probably can't wish on anybody. And we see still when, doesn't matter what difficulties you go through, Krishna reciprocates. And so long story short, Bhakta Rene Prabhu, apparently, it's a long story, his mother had died while he was protesting for that whole Native American pipeline thing that was going on in whatever. So he found out his mother had just recently died. Long after that, he found out that he may potentially have cancer. So when he was in a Michigan temple, one old Indian lady. Apparently, from what I remember he telling me, she doesn't really talk that much. But when she found out, this is how sometimes you don't know the community loves you unless you go through some difficult situation. When she found out that Renee had potentially may have had cancer, she gave him a bag. And she didn't tell him what was in the bag, but when he got home, he opened the bag. It was a Lord Nrisingadev deity.
Wow.
And so, and with all the paraphernalia, and so Deva Madhava, he showed Rene Prabhu how to worship this deity properly. And so while Rene was worshiping this deity for some time, he had to go to one of his doctor meetings. And so then he realized, oh, I'm going to be late for my doctor meeting. So he was like, I'll worship Nrisingadev when I get back. And he neglected Lord Nrisingadev. So then when he went to his doctor's appointment, and at this time, Giridhari Prabhu was witness to this. He was standing in the room with him at the time. But at the event that I'm about to tell you, he wasn't in the room at this time. So they were roommates in Ypsilanti. So when he came back from his doctor's appointment, he came into his room. And his room was, it looked like a bomb went off in his room. Everything was basically everywhere. And he knew that, I asked him, did you ask Giridhari, did you mess up the room? He was like, first of all, that never came to my mind that Giridhari messed up the room, because first of all, Giridhari came to me and said, what happened to the room? And second of all, he knew Giridhari probably didn't do this because there was deity pictures and, you know, stuff on the ground that he know he wouldn't have put on the ground. And so from that incident, we could appreciate that Lord Nrisingadev, he's not just a doll. He's very much alive. So my question is that in our spiritual life, you know, how can we develop this dedication to Lord Krishna when we know he's God? It's hard to develop. Oh, he could take care of himself. So it's hard for me to connect with him. Oh, you know, I neglect my chanting, my Bhagavatam. I'm so lazy. He could take care of himself. So why do I need to take care of him? So
right.
Expand on some of those points.
Yeah, I mean, the way there's a really nice story. Two stories are coming to mind right now. One of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, Pramod Puri Maharaj, when he was a brahmachari at the math in Navadvip, one night he woke up and in his dream, Krishna had come and said, look at you, sleeping so nicely with a warm blanket while I'm here freezing. So he got up, took a cold shower, you know, rang the altar bell, did the paricharyas, went on the altar, put a shawl around Krishna and then went back to sleep. And then there's so many stories like that in our culture and tradition. Another one just coming to mind now is Krishna coming to Sanatana Goswami and saying, like, come on, you're just offering me like dry dough balls, you know, like they're so dry and so hard, you know. Sanatana Goswami was like, what do you expect? I'm a sannyasi, I'm a renunciate. And Krishna was like, how about a little salt, at least a little salt, you know. So now here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead asking his devotee for a little salt, you know. So these stories are there in our tradition to help illustrate that, and all these devotees are fully aware that Krishna is God, you know, but somehow, because of cultivating a very loving mood of devotion for the deity, for Krishna, they had basically inspired Krishna to take shelter of their love. See, as long as we think Krishna is God and he doesn't need our love, we'll never get there. So at some point, one has to become convinced by hearing, by association, that Krishna wants your love, Adam. He has everything in the world, but he doesn't have your love. Your love is right now directed towards the things of this world. You want to become a big preacher, you want to save the world, that's very nice. But first and foremost, your love is meant for Krishna, right? So he has everything, but he doesn't have your love or my love. So that's what he's primarily interested in. So the devotee, by studying the pastimes of Vrindavan, and by hearing about the residents of Vrindavan, at some point develops this awareness that actually, Krishna is hankering after my love. He wants to taste what I have to offer. And this is just the mystical result of hearing the pastimes of Vrindavan. And when that awareness sets into you, and you execute your spiritual life, your service, with that awareness, that actually I am offering Krishna something, he needs this, he wants this. You know, this is for his pleasure. Yes, he's God, he can provide for himself, but somehow he's chosen me to provide this particular item for his pleasure. And that mood just matures and matures and matures. It's basically a maturation of love. A maturation of love for the Lord that allows us to feel concern for him, you know. Allows us to feel that if I don't turn on the air conditioner in the middle of the summer, Kishore is going to sweat. You know, if I don't, if the cloth is very itchy, right? When you dress the deity, the cloth can be a little itchy. So if it's itching my fingers, then it's probably itching him also. So I should be careful not to let it touch too much of his body because it's itchy, you know. In this way, if you know, the like, you know, if you're having the needle and by mistake the needle pokes the deity, one should feel horrible, like, oh my God, it's like poking me with a needle, you know. So, but if when we're not so developed in our love, then of course we won't feel that way. We'll just poke the deity and think, oh, anyways, it's stone, right? What can happen to a stone if you poke it with a needle? It's not a big deal. You know, Krishna's God. He doesn't feel the needle pokes. No, this is not the mood of bhakti. But that mood can only come when one hears about Krishna's intimate dealings with the residents of Vrindavan and realizes that actually Krishna wants my love and he's waiting for my love actually, and I should try to offer it to him. So thank you for that nice question. It's 8:30 now, so I'll end. Thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.